Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. So Buddhism arose over 2,000 years ago out of the human condition of suffering. And it was intended to be a spiritual practice. Not so much a religion, but a spiritual practice. But in very practical terms, in those very early days, it looked like what we call a system. Today we'd call it a system. A system for recognizing suffering, for reducing or eliminating suffering, and for not creating suffering. And early Buddhism was very systematic because the very early teachings consists of a variety of lists of things to do and things to not do, lists of things to believe and ways to behave. So it felt very systematic and very logical. And so over the centuries, however, it matured and the practice became less and less logical. Less and less emphasis on lists and on a so-called system. Instead, there was an increased emphasis on feelings and intuitions, and reliance on one's own personal experience. And more importantly, keeping good relations with people. So over the centuries, Buddhism became more than a systematic way of ending suffering, more than a technique for ending suffering. So a later generation of Buddhists recognized that the best way to understand this new spiritual practice was to explore it in terms of our relationships with each other. So many of you know from one of the lists, from the very first list of Buddhism, Four Noble Truths. The second Noble Truth said that the cause of suffering is our ignorance. And this ignorance referred to in Buddhism was not about a lack of intelligence, not because we were stupid, not about lack of intelligence or our personal circumstances, but the ignorance that Buddha's teaching was referring to was about not recognizing the true nature of things. Ignorant of the way things are. Ignorance of the way things are. And also not recognizing how things are going, how life flows, the relationship. This was the notion of ignorance that Buddha was talking about. And it also included not recognizing our own selves, not recognizing who we are. This is part of our ignorance, not recognizing who we are. So the sum of all these aspects of ignorance is that human beings suffered because they didn't didn't understand reality. Or in other words, how things work, how everything fits together. So to end suffering, we have this practice so that we can see into the truth of things and put an end to ignorance. And the way we see into the truth of things is to stay present with a clear mind. This is our practice, as you know. So what it means is that the prerequisite for ending suffering, for overcoming ignorance, is our awareness, continued awareness. And this is the nature of our practice, as you know. So we can say, that the cause of suffering is maybe not so much ignorance, but actually not paying attention to what's going on. In other words, we allow our mind to become distracted and don't pay attention to reality, as if we were like little kids in a schoolroom, sitting there with an assignment, but dreaming of playing, dreaming of the games we can play, and having a very difficult time doing the work at hand. So our lack of awareness, or the difficulty of maintaining awareness, is not only that we bump into things as if we're in the dark, it's also about not seeing things as they are. So another one of the lists of the early Buddhist teaching was the Eightfold Path. And one of those steps is right mindfulness. And this is the heart of Buddha's teaching, of his systematic teaching. Right mindfulness gives us the energy to come back to the present moment when we are distracted. To come back to the present moment. What does all this mean for us? What does it mean for us as individuals? And how does this notion of awareness impact our daily life? First of all, I think when we give our attention to what's in front of us, our energy is very steady. Our mind is not anxious, and we are alive because we are present. And we can give our attention to others. And when we give our attention to others, it says if we give life to another person or to an object, we actually give a gift of life, when we give our attention. And when this happens, when we give our attention, we, you, and the other one, the one you're with, person you're with, the thing you're with, you and she are one. when you give your attention. There's no separation. The second, another aspect of awareness says that when we are present in a situation, we relieve the suffering of others by giving ourselves as a gift when we make our effort to be present with another. We are giving ourselves as a gift. And the third manifestation of awareness is that we can gain understanding, wisdom, by seeing things completely. And finally, through our awareness, we ourselves will evolve and blossom by seeing and letting go of our habits or difficulties. So awareness is like keeping our house in order, keeping our house clean by removing all the distracting traces and keeping things in order. And without awareness, we cannot take care of ourselves. By not taking care of ourselves, what I mean is the way that we hold ourselves and that the way that we move ourselves in our life is not thoughtful. Not thoughtful. When we're not thoughtful, we can't take care of ourselves because the mind is very heavy and full of confusion. These are the traces. These are the distracting traces we remove from our house when we maintain our awareness. So there are essentially, I think, three dimensions of awareness. The first one is the body. And usually we forget the body when we think about our practice. But when we practice with awareness, we are mindful of our body. We become reacquainted with it, and we acknowledge each part. We're aware of our posture, and we're aware when we change posture. The second dimension of awareness is the breath. To be aware of our breathing, to be aware of our breath is like center stage. It gets our attention. And we become aware of our calmness when we breathe with mindfulness. And we note the ease of our breath when we breathe with mindfulness. And we note the depth of our breath and we note its gentleness. And I think the third dimension of awareness is our feelings. With mindfulness, we can acknowledge our feelings because too often we ignore them or don't recognize them. But when we are aware, we can acknowledge our feelings. And we discover something really profound and interesting that when we acknowledge our feelings, we discover that those feelings are us. we are that feeling in this moment. That's who we are in this moment, is our feelings. So we don't attach to them or reject them. We simply acknowledge them. We face them with an accepting mind, and our feeling of heaviness becomes light and open and smiling. But without awareness, there is anxiety, and we are unable to see the true nature of things, which is what we want. We want this understanding. It's pretty simple in our daily life to see the appearance of things, but it's not such a simple matter to see their true nature. We have to make some extra effort. We have to make an extra effort to recognize the impermanence of things as well as their interconnectedness. That includes things and people. So the root of human fears and insecurities comes about because we do not recognize the true nature of the phenomenon of the world. Which results in anxiety and the inability to be present in this moment. And this is why we practice. If we pay attention to the physical, material phenomenon of the world and mental phenomenon, and if we carefully watch their arising and their interaction, ignorance turns into wisdom, and fear turns into confidence. So Zen practice is about being mindful of our own desires. And when we are mindful of our desires, we will notice that when a desire arises, the mind rushes to satisfy it, doesn't it? How can I get this? The mind wants to relieve the anxiety, wants to have what it desires. Feels like there's a great big hole needing to be filled. But if a desire comes up and we notice we have concern for fulfilling it, if we're not so hasty and we give attention to the desire, we see that there is no hole that needs to be filled and that we are already complete. We come to realize that we have everything we need, that we lack for nothing. Then desire is transformed into freedom. We are fortunate to have our center in the midst of nature. We have many trees and many plants. We're surrounded by growing things and green things. And we're always, it reminds us that a plant depends on sunlight. A plant will respond to sunlight, so that it grows and it flourishes. But if there is no light, the plant will die. Except, of course, for certain mushrooms that like the dark. So in the same way, our mind depends on and responds to awareness. Awareness is our light. Practice is how we shine the light on our mind. Practice is how we give birth to the mind, just as sunlight gives birth to the plant. We become alert and aware and present. And through our practice, we recast the negative feelings that we might have into joy. And we can transform indifference and isolation into caring. And that's what we want to be. We want to be a caring individual. So our practice is about not getting stuck in the past or the future, not getting caught in anger or fear, and not feeling sorry for ourselves when things don't go right. The practice means coming back to the present moment without distraction. And of course, we try to do that, to stay present, and we find that it's pretty impossible to stay in the present moment 100% of the time. Because it is the nature of our mind, it is the job of our mind to be curious and spontaneous and to think of things. That's what the mind does. So it's not possible to stay 100% in the present moment. The mind is a creative thing. But the practice is about not staying 100% in the present moment. The practice is about having the courage to return to the present moment when a distraction arises. Practice is about courage. Suzuki Roshi said, it builds your character. Courage to return to the present moment. That's not always so easy. We have to work at it. And some people can maintain their attention and their focus easier than others. It's just the way we are. But it actually makes no difference if it's easy or if it's hard to maintain attention. It makes no difference degree of difficulty. That's not the point. We don't say to somebody else, oh, you're so attentive, it's easy, it's so easy for you, so hard for me. That's not the point. The point is to make our best effort and to be courageous. So our spiritual practice is about awakening or expressing our true nature, or what we sometimes call Buddha nature. Buddha means the awakened one, somebody who's awake. Buddha means to be awake. Or in other words, mindful all the time. Mindful all the time. That's Buddha. And there's no such thing is a part-time Buddha. We all are inherently Buddha. We just have to make the effort to express it. Nobody is a part-time Buddha. There's no limitation of how much Buddha we can be. Buddha's job is to maintain the motivation and the sincerity for living authentically. Maintain the motivation. Now, in Buddhism, there's the Buddha and there are the Bodhisattvas, the awakened ones, And the Bodhisattva of compassion is Kanan. This is Kanan here. And the Kanan Bodhisattva in early Buddhist iconography, the Kanan Bodhisattva was often depicted having 1,000 arms. With an eye in the palm of each hand. 1,000 arms. That can be put into action to help people. Kanan Bodhisattva has infinite capacity to help people. That's what 1,000 arms mean. And the eye in the palm of each hand means infinite wisdom and infinite insight, infinite capacity to see things as they are. And when we think about this depiction of the Bodhisattva, we recognize that without the wisdom of the eye, the action of the arm could create harm. So we need both. We don't just spring into action without the wisdom. So only when our feelings have wisdom as their basis do we become unselfish. Wisdom is the basis for selflessness. Because without wisdom and without insight, our feelings will be directed at pleasing ourselves. So with the wisdom and the insight of the Bodhisattva, our feelings turn to taking care of others and turn to taking care of the world. So our wisdom, our inherent wisdom, the wisdom of the Buddha that we have, will express itself and will manifest itself through our practice. This is our trust. And so we practice without end. too serious? Does anybody have a question? It's Victor.
You said, without awareness, we cannot take care of ourselves. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Without awareness, we won't recognize when we do or say things that are harmful. So we take care of ourselves and we take care of each other by doing things and saying things that are supportive and helpful. And we can only do that when we are aware of what will work in a situation. If we're not aware of a relationship, then our attitude is, oh, I can say or do anything, I don't care. And that's kind of dangerous. Some of that is going on right now. Not in this room, but somewhere. We need to be aware of what will create benefit and what will create suffering. And that guides us. Yes, Jaya.
Because by saying that you don't need to be aware 100% of the time and be in the moment, I think that's something that when you imagine, when you read Buddha's life, you read about it, and you see how he lived, you know, that becomes kind of like an ideal. And so I like, thank you for saying that.
Mm.
You don't need to, it's not possible to do it, do that. I think that's something that is a relief to hear for me. Because it's like when you sit in zazen, there's some times when it seems like there's just good time, good zazen, good sittings, and then And that's like daily life too. Sometimes it's you're very aware, you're very present, and then some days it's just doesn't happen. And I think when we practice it, it seems like, you know, we're hard on us, at least I'm hard on myself.
Mm-hmm.
Tell myself, no, can't do that. So thank you. I just want to say thank you for saying it. You just have to keep courageous.
Yes, it's useless to judge ourselves. If distractions arise, it's doesn't make sense. It's just the mind doing its thing. That's what the mind evolved to do: solve problems, create things, survive in the everyday world. The mind is always looking at that. Can't help itself. So if it starts to do that when you're in zazen, okay, I get it. I see what you're doing. It's okay. That's our attitude. Oh, but I'm coming back. Thank you. Yes, please, Rohan. Well, through wisdom, we can understand the nature of things. The nature of things, which are impermanent, transient, and have no core being. And when we see that, our desire for them vanishes. Nothing to hold on to. But when that wisdom isn't there, we mistakenly see things as something that we can, that is substantial, that we can possess. And it tends to make us desire and be selfish. So without wisdom, we are always shopping. We are always in the store or on the internet shopping for something. But with wisdom, we realize those things are insubstantial. I don't need those things. I don't need to chase after those things. I can turn my attention to giving and to being unselfish. And that is a much more satisfying way of life. Yes, Umar.
So, channeling?
Channeling.
What is given to us, we give to others. The gifts that we have that are coming to us, we use those gifts, whatever it is, the work that we do, the wisdom that we have, the money that we have, using to give to people what is required in that moment.
No, it's more fundamental. If we have no money, or if somebody in front of us, if they have a difficulty that cannot be resolved with money or possessions, then we have to give the only thing we can, and that's ourselves. So, I don't know about channeling, but we can say that our life is a gift. We don't know why. How'd this happen? We don't know. We're always asking, how come we're here? But we stop asking it after a while and just say, well, how do I use it now that it's here? And so the life we have is a gift, and we share it. We give it away all the time simply by being with people. And this giving away of this gift does not diminish us. Doesn't mean we have less of it. It means we have more of it. Thank you. Yes.
Is that not a good thing, or is that not consistent with the idea that you're for other people?
I think when we meet somebody like that who's uncomfortable being with others, who holds back, I think it means there's some fear. So when we meet somebody like that, it's important not to judge them. If they seem to ignore us, or they seem to treat us with indifference, it doesn't help to judge them. What might be helpful is to recognize that they probably have some kind of fear that keeps them separate. And to give the gift of ourselves as best we can in the midst of their fear. So we try not to withhold ourselves from anyone. Not from people who it's easy to get along with, and not from people who it's a little bit more difficult to get along with. We try to give ourselves to everyone. This is a bodhisattva way. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.